Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. My name is Michael Rice, and I assume that Jeannie is having some technical difficulties. She's in a different part of the city than I am. Here we are in Bristol, Tennessee, where we're having a 60-degree, sunny, absolutely gorgeous day. And it's just beautiful, warm, and a little breezy, and blue skies. So welcome to Parent-Teacher Talk Mondays. We are honored and delighted to be able to support you in this endeavor to live a truly human life. And, of course, our definition of the human is simple. It's experiential. Everybody can have the experience. All you have to do is hold a newborn child. When you hold a newborn, you know exactly what human life is. And if you're not experiencing your life out of that awesome presence of love, then our invitation is that you would begin to do some work and clean that up. Seeing as how it's Parent-Teacher Talk Monday, I'd like to just offer a quote that comes from Jonas Salk. We talked about this one before, but it kind of strikes me in a new way today, where Salk says, "Our greatest responsibility is to be good ancestors." And, of course, to be good ancestors is to be good parents. What is a good parent? Well, my offering is a good parent would be one who functions as a human being. Pretty rare event on our planet, sadly, especially when the stress is up and the chips are down. So our invitation is that you select and choose to do the work of becoming a good parent, whether your children are not yet conceived, whether your children are in utero, whether your children are 60 years of age, doesn't matter. It's never too late to be a good parent. What is a good parent? A good parent is one who functions as this awesome, active presence in love and realizes what the possibilities are for human life. You know, when you look around at the physics of how the world works, what we realize is that we're continuously looking at a construct in our minds that we call reality. Some realities shine with life and aliveness, and some of them are pretty dulled by hostility and fear. And so recognizing that the output of your mind is actually a computation, and that computation is based on generations and generations and generations of others doing computations. And there is a signal that tells you that you're not living a human life. There's a signal that tells you when the computation being made to produce your perception, to produce the output of your mind, is off base. And the signal is that in the end result of your perception, there is either fear or hostility. If those two imposters, or actually I should say informers, enter into the process of your perception, into your experience, then you've just been signaled that the computation your mind is making is incorrect and it will not serve your highest and best possibility. We tend to make computations based upon the experience of those people closest to us. For instance, as a parent, your children will likely grow up speaking the same words you speak, thinking in a similar way to the way that you think and buying into the realities that you have structured them with. In other words, if your computations are based in hostility or fear, chances are your children's computations, your children's realities will be based in hostility and fear, which means that, like yourself, they're going to make all kinds of mistakes. You'll notice if you live a life of hostility and fear, you know, Jeannie, when she opens the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, always asks the question, how many have ever held a newborn child? And then asks everyone to describe the essence of the newborn. 100% of the time, everywhere on the planet, every culture we've ever asked the question, what is the essence of the newborn? The answer is always some variation on the theme of love. And so the truth about human life is, I think the reason everybody's answer is the same, that it's based in something to do with love, is because everybody knows what human life is. And so if you want guidance to guide you into a human life, then you want your guidance to be based in love. Now, if you don't mind not living a human life, if you think that living a life based in hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, and pain is an okay thing to do, if you think that finding somebody to criticize, always finding something wrong with everything you look at, finding something wrong with them, and no matter who it is, figuring out that they have a problem while you're in hostility or fear, then notice that your mind is computing incorrectly. And the signal that hostility or fear shows up in your perception says nothing about anything else except your own process of how your mind computes its reality. And if your reality is not serving your highest and best, that is, if there's hostility or fear in it, you'll notice that whenever you function out of it, it creates some kind of a negative result. You know, the second question Jeannie asks in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is, how many have ever done something they regret? And asked to describe what they were feeling that motivated them to do what they now regret. And 100% of the time, when that question is asked, as opposed to the question about human life and love, everybody's answer some variation on the theme of hostility or fear. Hostility or fear is a signal that your mind is basing it, the computation of its reality, on falsehood, on lies, on things that will not serve your highest and best possibilities. And if there is a reality based in hostility or fear, it's time to deconstruct that reality. It's time to remove the root of the hostile and fearful mind, because the hostile and fearful mind is not a human mind. And in the ancient Aramaic language, the tool for deconstructing that which has been computed as reality by your mind is called forgiveness. Forgiveness gives you the opportunity to err at the root of the mind's output so that your mind's output will improve and increase the possibility that the end result, perception, will serve you best as a human being. So as a human, based in love, everybody's answer again about the newborn is love. Now, we're brought into a world that puts its thumbprints on us and forces its computations about rage and guilt and grief and pain and war and drama and trauma and all the rest. But we can hammer out those thumbprints. We can improve the output of the mind so that the end result, perception, will truly serve you as a human being. Now, when you recognize the enormity of the challenge, and it is an enormous challenge, but once you realize the challenge is there to be done, it's like, what else is there to do? Is that since all reality, all perception is based on generations and generations of computations, the possibility for the introduction of error is pretty much endless. And so it is in one's own best interest, if they want a mind that serves the highest and best possibility of a human life, every reality, as often as necessary, until we arrive at flawless perception. What would flawless perception look like? What would the guidance system that would truly guide us into human life look like? Well, first of all, recognize that human life is love. So perception that leaves us physiologically sparkling with the active presence of love, that feeds every cell in our structure with human bliss, would be corrected perception. Then, and only then, has human life really, truly returned to the human form. Again, Jonas Salk, our greatest responsibility is to be good ancestors. The parent who would be a good ancestor, each time they found themselves in some form of hostility or fear, in front of their child would own, my mind is constructing a reality based in hostility or fear, dear son or dear daughter, and I think I'll do some correction work. In fact, as the child grows in understanding, you might even ask the child to hold the space and support you in deconstructing the realities based in hostility or fear, in forgiving. And arriving at the point, and for most people, it starts out just as sometimes just a second or two's experience of this total physiological presence of love, this experience. Now, it's not easy to have that experience when you've had generations and generations of hostility or fear that have fed into the computation process that your mind uses to arrive at its reality. And so there's work to be done, but, you know, so what? That's just the game. You know, if you think about it, who is it that makes the great breakthroughs? If you look at real human endeavor, who is it that makes the great breakthroughs? That is, those whose computations create a reality, the output of the mind, that's based in truth and love. The rest of the world is, in essence, locked into the insanity of hostility and fear. You know, Jonas Salk is a pretty awesome man. Outside of the medical realm, his level of understanding and where he got his breakthroughs, how he came to understand, you know, he was kind of an outcast from the medical community, although he created this Salk vaccine for polio. He was kind of an outcast. In fact, the Salk Institute, he said that I would never be able to belong to this institute if I hadn't started it myself. He was a renegade. He didn't fit into the hostility and fear-based academic and research world. In fact, here's another quote that Salk offers us, and here's a man who's describing how his awesome discoveries led to something new, something really amazing in the human world. He says, it is always with excitement that I wake in the morning, wondering what my intuition will toss up at me, like gifts from the sea. I work with it, and I rely on it. It is my partner. Intuition is one of those spiritual faculties. Aside from love, intuition is one of the five smooth stones of David with which the monster Goliath is deconstructed. The truth of our intuition, and we have to be living in a human life to really have that intuition function fully and to really bring forward who we truly are as human beings. Are you one who's ready to make real breakthroughs in the world, real, honest to God discoveries that contribute to the whole of humanity? Now, of course, if you come from generations of hostility and fear and self-deprecating persons, then your mind says, who, me? I could never do that. I'm not worthy of that. I don't deserve that. I'm not smart enough. And your mind's got a whole series of realities that it holds, perhaps, based in generations of that kind of thinking. Are you one who's ready to deconstruct, to forgive that kind of thinking, and to really, truly be one who would bring breakthrough to the world? You don't need any special attributes. You don't need any special education. In fact, in many cases, education would be a drawback to making those discoveries, because education tends to today. If you look at the truth of the word education, the word educare comes from the root that means to draw out. It does not mean to put in. To be able to come to a situation and look and think differently, see something different, construct a different reality than everybody else constructs. And most of education today, as opposed to being education, is actually a form of brainwashing or indoctrination that puts people into a certain channel of so-called thinking that limits the capacity to what's useful to the commercial system and locks us out of our true higher faculties. You know, I can remember being a kid, and I kind of just let go of the whole game of education at that point. But I can remember being a kid in math class, coming up with answers to math questions, and the teacher would say, well, how did you arrive at that? And, you know, I really couldn't tell the teacher how I did that. And it would be, well, then, you know, well, what's wrong with you? You can't tell us how you did that? You see, here's how we do it. We go this and we do that. We draw this over here and we bring that over there and then we do this and then we do that. That's how you get to the right answer. If you got to the right answer without doing that, then we don't approve of you because you're not locked into the channel we want you locked into. At which point I realized this system is insane and pretty much said, thanks, I'll pass. When your child decides to live in a different world than the one that locks him into a channel, your child will be labeled, will be given all kinds of names because it won't follow the prescribed methods of arriving at reality and behavior. If your child is an original, nurture your original. Don't buy the labels, and especially don't pay for the pills that are going to be fed to them to try to force them back in the channels that are desired by the commercial system. It's time for us as humanity to wake up and to be original, brilliant, sparkling with the active presence of love and aliveness, as opposed to the dullness of, oh, look, I got all A's, I get approval. Oh, mom, dad, look, I got A's, do you love me now? Better to have a child gets all D's and lives in aliveness than one who works hard to seek approval so they can pretend that now they're loved. A lot of falsity has fallen into this culture of ours, this culture of hostility, fear, grief, and rage that leaves so many devoid of human life. And our invitation is, if you find yourself in this space where you are in the situation where you're not sparkling with this active presence of love in every cell, and question everything you've been taught and start to take away, start to dissolve, start to forgive, start to deconstruct the realities your mind has been forced to accept. When you do, like Salk, you will probably wake up in the morning and say, it is always with excitement that I wake up in the morning, wondering what my intuition will toss up to me today, like the gifts from the sea. I work with it and rely on it as my partner. Imagine waking up every morning with that kind of excitement. There is a power in you that will teach you on a daily basis, if you're available to be taught. If you are stuck in the constructs of the world, then that power will seem to be some sort of a fantasy, an impossible fantasy that could never be true. Einstein said 90% of his work was intuition, 10% was genius. Would you like to be in the category of an Einstein or a Salk? You've got to wake up excited every morning. What are you going to be given today? Support your children learning to structure a reality where they wake up every morning excited, not about the burden that the teacher put on them to function the way that the system wants them to, but excited that they're alive and that today life is going to teach them. They're available, and they sparkle with that presence of love, 24/7, 365. That's what we're here to support, and that's what Parent-Teacher Talk Mondays is about. Let's check and see if Jeannie is with us at this point. We found her.
Hi there. Yes, I'm here. Thank you for starting off. I told Mom, I said, you could do the show on your own without anybody asking questions or anything. But, yeah, it took me a little while to
get
on.
Well, you know, it's nice to be able to step into that space where we can sparkle and where we can wake up with the excitement of being able to say, thank you, Creator, for what I'm going to receive today and how you're going to guide me to live, rather than relying on the computations and the constructs of the past. It's like such an awesome space of aliveness. I know that when I watch you teach, I watch you do that. When I watch you in a workshop and you speak up and you are in that original space, when I watch you create something in the kitchen and come out in such aliveness with that sparkle, it delights and it excites me, and that's what we're here to live in, I believe.
Absolutely. We did get a message through the chat room this morning. Mariana said that I haven't read my email yet, so I haven't seen it, but she said she sent us the translations this morning, so we've got some things translated, so we're excited about getting that. And
awesome.
We do not have a caller on, and I don't see Suzanne with us either, but Dr. Tim is with us.
Well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim, see how the young man is today.
I'm doing quite well, thanks. I thoroughly enjoyed the show on Friday and listened to it again yesterday as I was driving home. Dale and you were both quite in the zone, I believe, in that series of comments and questions, so that was delightful. And I was once again just amazed at how closely your intro parallels the session I had from 10 to 11 o'clock today, and it's just one of those things where great minds run on the same track. And yesterday and today both, I was thinking about how strong my urge was to daydream as a child, and how much conflict that generated in the school system. And I remember vividly, all the way through grade school, staring out the window, daydreaming in class, and fighting, catching myself, and being angry with myself that I couldn't stop the daydreaming, because my desire was to please the people, the teachers, the priests, the nuns, whoever it was. And then I think back, you know, now I've finished all the way through school. Here's somebody who never liked school, kindergarten, grade school, high school, college, didn't like it. And then went back for a graduate degree. Because the promise was there that, you know, they had something so valuable to teach me and I could really change the world and make a difference and make money if I got my graduate degree. So I did all of that, and I'm here to tell you on the other end that as I look back to what I learned in the classes, in the classroom, and that process of graduate school, the things that I offer people of value in my practice, in my day-to-day life, have almost nothing to do with what I learned in graduate school in terms of the content of the material. Now, certainly, I probably learned something about, you know, sticking to a goal and persevering and being consistent and follow through and living up to my commitments. I probably learned some of those things. But the content of what they were teaching is not what I give people of value in my sessions and in my life today. That comes from what I learned by living with my parents, who were fabulous people, and by living with some of the best mentors and friends accumulated over the years. But the best stuff I teach people and share with people and live out in front of people didn't come from a book. It didn't come from a classroom. It didn't come from a curriculum. So I've been having those thoughts in the past couple days, and so you can imagine how I'm sitting here resonating with your talk and your intro.
Very cool. Very cool. And, you know, I'm in full agreement with you when we, if we could set up our so-called educational systems to teach people to sparkle with human life, there would be so much awesome creation in the world that we would not recognize the world. Of course, there might not be so many people who'd be willing to take out the garbage or what have you, but I'm sure that we'd find a solution for that too if we had people who were actually truly, truly living in that awesome active presence of love that we're designed to live in.
Yeah, I would agree. And the evidence I have for that is the kinds of exchanges and interactions that go on when I'm in the support group on Tuesday nights, or I have the luxury of connecting with some old friends that have been some of my favorite friends and mentors over the years. And when I sink into one of those lovely times at an intensive where people have just gotten through a big pile of garbage and they're connecting to the love and support which is all around in those settings, that's what you're talking about. That's the experience we're trying to point at when we talk about living from the space of love. And of course, you can't really talk about it directly. You just have to tell people what steps you took to have that experience, and which steps they might take in their own life to move toward that experience.
Well, it's interesting. People will say, well, just give me a book that will give me that experience. And of course, no book can give anyone an experience. A book can give people guidance into using the tools so they'll have that experience. They'll awaken to that experience. They'll live in that experience, that sparkle, that aliveness. But unfortunately, and you know, it's interesting. I was on an international conference call yesterday morning, and it was people who are talking about, you know, bringing some new things into the world, some new technologies and such, and virtually everybody. And these are people who kind of, you know, are at the top of their field. Everybody's looking for the magic. Oh, we're developing a piece of technology to do this. Oh, we're going to have a machine that's going to heal people. We'll have this machine and that machine. It's like everybody wants the shortcut. Well, let's see. If we can hook everybody up to a machine and call them healed, what will that healed state look like? Of course, to heal, one has to change their minds. Who's going to determine what their minds will be changed to? You know, it's ludicrous to think that the magic pill is going to fix it for everybody, and that one can bypass the work that's required. I've been talking with some people recently who just actually came and did a Y workshop earlier this week here in Bristol, and they were just so excited when they saw how that worksheet works and you cancel the goal and what they got in touch with. And of course, what they got in touch with wasn't very nice, wasn't very pleasant, but they were able to see how that, which was not very nice and wasn't very pleasant, had impacted their lives. And then they disappeared from the conversation. It's just interesting to watch how that happens,
because one is required to look inside themselves to process through and to deal with those things that are not always fun to deal with. But, oh, the benefit, the result is awesome. I'm sure you've never run into anybody in your work, Dr. Tim, or your practice, that once they make a breakthrough and get very, very excited about it, then turn tail and run and don't want to do the next piece of work. Oh, well, now I'm finished, right? Now it's all over. You've never had that happen, have you?
I have had that happen. I have it happen on a regular basis. Yeah. And I remember one of Guy Finley's talks where he says, you know, he gets hundreds of pieces of email every month. And he said, to the one, they're all basically asking for the same thing. What can I read? What can you tell me so I don't have to do the work? Mm-hmm. And I haven't found it yet. I'm still looking. If I find it, I will charge an exorbitant fee for it, I guarantee you. I'll make it available, but I'll make a lot of money off of it. But I haven't found it. And the thing we have found that has made my life better day by day, year by year, since I first discovered it, is this work. And it's daily recommitting to do my work. And people don't really like it when I tell them that that's the only thing I found that does it. But so far, that's what I'm stuck with. Or blessed with, depending upon your...
Cheers, and you're not finished?
Well, I'm not finished yet. I'm not finished yet. Although, you know, the ease with which I go through situations and interactions with people that I used to count as very difficult and tragic and traumatic is astounding. It absolutely astounds me these days. So while I'm not finished, I'm in far better shape than I was when I first encountered the work. And
well, I certainly feel that and agree with you.
Somebody sent me a message over the weekend and asked if I'd ever heard of Alan Watts. And my reply was yes. I think it was senior year of high school was the first time somebody gave me one of his books. And I thought at the time, it's interesting. This guy's way off the wall. It's bizarre. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, this guy's nuts. And I remember, you know, reading the book once or twice and thinking, yeah, there's some good stuff in there. But today when I hear, you know, some of his quotes, it's just exactly Course in Miracles, Michael Rice, Guy Finley, Dale Allen Hoffman, Krishnamurti, it's the same stuff. It's just wonderful. And, of course, when I was a freshman or senior in high school, I didn't have any of the, as you call it, the brain cells or the basis for understanding the work at those deeper levels. But so now I do. And now I go back and read people like Alan Watts and get a whole new level of appreciation that simply wasn't possible when I was 17 years old. And I look forward to reading Dr. Michael Rice's stuff and watching his four-hour video again. Did you get through looking at that or approving that yet?
When we finished our workshops too, we've basically got a week here with family, so we've pretty much taken that time off to hang out and be with family, aside from, you know, some basic organizational stuff with the rest of our tour. And Jeannie's been creating, you know, we've created a schedule for next summer that's on the website now, I think, and Jeannie has set up her women healing the whole woman intensive that we'll be doing in Florida, or she'll be doing concurrently with the 9-day Y. So aside from organizational stuff, it's mostly been family time and getting some hangout time with them. We will actually do Thanksgiving here with family, and then first thing Friday morning we'll get in the van and head to Wilmington, North Carolina. We're actually going to be staying with Susan Darnell, and on Sunday we'll start actually an 8-day series of presentations at Unity in Wilmington. And then we finished there. We've set aside the time to sit down and go through the whole thing and give feedback to get that finalized and ready to rock and roll.
Well, I look forward to it. I think it's a wonderful 4-hour setup, and I feel blessed to have access to it on the advanced release, and I look forward to the time when I can make copies and get out to people or have them go to your website and order it. And as I was saying, I look forward to how I'm going to understand that material differently in 2 or 3 years. Because as you said, when you talk about the Kaboris manuscript, you keep saying, well, you know, the thing is, we don't know what we don't know yet. So this is just the best we've got at this level of understanding. But with further work and translation and re-experiencing, we may know more than this coming from the same material.
I have no doubt that will be true. Since 1,000 times I've looked at it and come back and gone, oh, my God, look at this. Look at this. Oh, how could I miss that one? And so, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Let's just check with Jeannie and see if anything is happening in the chat room. And or if anybody's in the phone queue with a hand up, throw the question for us.
Nobody has their hand up. There's several people on the phone. So if somebody presses 1, you're first in line without waiting. And in the chat room, I was just having a conversation with Mariana, and she was just, as Dr. Tim was answering, she was just talking about how amazing Dr. Tim is in the support group and how wonderful it was to have that support. So you have one of your fans in the chat room too, Dr. Tim.
Well, thank you, Mariana, and thank you, Jeannie. We're not looking for fans, though. We're looking for fellow pursuers of the truth in the application of the tools. So thanks for being there, and I hope she keeps using the tools, and I hope it's working for her.
Absolutely. Yeah, she said that it was way cool to do the translation of the, can't remember right off what all we gave her. I know we gave her the commitment, and I'm not sure what else, and she's got those translated, and she said she was waiting for her next project. And so I told her that we would start sending her chapters of the edited version. She was going to pull the book down off of the website and start translating it, and I told her to wait and that we would send her the updated chapters that, Michael, that you have edited already, and that she could do chapter at a time. And so she's willing to do that, and she said that it was great for her to be doing it, that she was getting a lot out of it as she was doing the translation. So that's another way of getting your work on a different level, is by translating it over, because you've really got to pay attention to what you're reading and translate the meaning and not just the words. And so that's another way, if there's anybody out there that speaks a different language that's willing to take it to another language. I was just reading what she was writing at the same time I'm talking, and she says, I'm doing them in Greek and Greekish, and it's probably all Greek to you, like out loud. So anyway... So 646-200.
The next piece to do, and we'll send you a copy of the latest reality management worksheet. That would be the next most important piece to translate, I think.
Yeah, that's true. That'd be awesome. So we'll get that sent to her. We did have a hand just go up. So it's area code
awesome.
901. You're on the air.
Hi there, Brenda Memphis. How are you all doing?
Hey, welcome. Delighted to hear your voice.
Thank
you. How can we serve you today?
I'm here today. I'm here. I'm looking for that intuitive brilliance. But it's things are kind of at a standstill, and so they say that faith is when nothing's happening. So I'm working with that. I had meant to call in on Friday with Aramaic Friday. My sister was here and her husband, and we just kind of let the time slip by and we missed the discussion. But I wanted to ask if you could do some clarification on the difference between actuality and reality.
Well, my input on that would be that the world is what the world is. There is this unknown something out there that probably if we picked a number, we could say, actually, Jeannie and I have been working on a jigsaw puzzle. So imagine that we have a 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle. And we put together 5,000 pieces of the puzzle. And we decide in looking at the 5,000 pieces of the puzzle, because we don't have a box top, that this is what the puzzle is. And we make up a story about, we create a story about what the puzzle is, and then as we structure another 5,000 pieces, another 10,000 pieces, another 20,000 pieces, and the puzzle changes so totally and so completely that it doesn't even resemble what it started out as, but we're sticking to our story. You know, sticking to the story is like, you know, it's a word represented in the religious world as dogma. We have a dogma. We have a doctrine. This is the way it is. We don't have a clue about the 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle, but we, humanity, have put together 5,000 pieces of the puzzle, and here's our story, and we are sticking to our story, and if you don't believe our story, then you're going to go to hell.
Okay.
And humans, or actually those who aren't functioning as love, are actually non-human, are living and tend to live out of that story, and a lot of it's based in hostility or fear, and they're sticking to their story. I love how Richard Bach said in his book, Illusions, argue for your limitations and they're yours. So people have beliefs, realities about themselves, about the Creator, about the world, and they allow that belief to become the source of their thinking. In a parable form, they allow that belief to become their father, their parent, their director, their guide. If you go back 2,000 years ago, that was kind of the situation with Yeshua. Yeshua says, I'm in this world, I'm in this 5,000-piece puzzle with all you guys, but I'm not of it. It is not my father. I don't allow the 5,000-piece story that humans have created or non-humans have created to control my thinking. I've decided to live in the sparkle of love and the active aliveness of a different guide, a different parent. I'll call it my father. And I'll tell you where you can locate the father. Most everybody in the universe, based on the 5,000-piece story, is saying, well, the father's out there somewhere, I think somewhere up in the sky. I remember hearing about one preacher who said he knew exactly where heaven was, and it was 6 miles up, and if we send rockets there, we're in trouble because we're going to crash into heaven. So people who allow that story to become their father, to become their source, are no longer available to the true father. So Yeshua says, you know, Yeshua speaks of the Pharisee of the day, and he says, you have a different father than I do. I'm in this world, but I'm not of it. I have chosen, and this kind of ties in, it was a good question to ask, kind of ties into the introduction that I did. And that is that I'm willing to be in the space of openness and availability for the 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle to tell me what it's about. I'm willing to connect. You know, if you listen to the physicists tell us that every molecule in the universe is in continuous communication with every other molecule in the universe. If you and I have molecules, then our molecules are continuously communicating with the whole 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle. It's called intuition. If we live in that, then the actuality, if you think of, you know, the creator embodied in the creation, we're told that the creator is omnipresent, everywhere present. If the creator is omnipresent in the 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle, is it possible that every piece of the actuality, every piece of the 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle is attempting to communicate with us? And that's what Yeshua said, I'm in this world, but I'm not of it. I have a different father, and I listen to my father, and my father instructs me. How was it that that Jonas Salk said it? I think he was talking about precisely the same thing. And what Salk said is, I just 1 second here. Let me turn back to this quote of Salk. Give me 1 second here. Oh, his quote on imagination just disappeared from my computer. Ah.
Michael, what's his full name?
And I'll look it up. Unfortunately, here. The quote has disappeared from my computer. But in essence, he says, I wake up every morning excited because my partner is intuition. My partner is the instructions I get from the 500 billion piece universe. That's what Yeshua referred to as the Father. His father was different from the father. And what Yeshua told the Pharisees is, your father is the father of liars. Everything that's in existence, in our existent story, in our existent reality, the output of the mind, based on the content of the mind from the past, is from the past, therefore no longer alive, therefore by definition it's all based in a lie. And Yeshua said, your father is the father of liars. And he wasn't putting them down as such, he was, I think, trying to inform them that they had to let go of their stories, which the mind tends to think of as security, and then letting go of their stories actually be available. And if you think of the creator, omnipresent, if that is our source, if that is our father, then that actuality, the 500 billion piece actuality, is continuously attempting to teach us if we're available to it. If we're stuck in the output of our minds and our own realities, then we're not available. And if you put together, you know, the idea from the ancients of the Trinity, are we talking about the whole of the creation, every molecule embodying the creator attempting to teach us continuously, and the flow of information and energy from that whole of creation is the spirit, or the energy moving toward us, designed to support us and assist us? And if we listen to that, and if we are the offspring of that, if we allow that to be our source, then are we destined to be the sun, the offspring of the creator? If you listen to the ancient scriptures, they said, as many are sons and daughters of God as those who are led by the Spirit of God. Not as many as who say magic words and hope that everything will be okay. As many as are led by the Spirit of God are the sons and daughters of God. And God is love. We're not talking about the religious 5,000-piece picture of the guy with the beard in the sky. We're talking about the Creator, omnipresent, continuously communicating with us. So there's actuality trying to instruct us all the time. There's reality. People are sticking to their story. And one of the things that I think causes people to stick to their story, their reality, is they figured out a way to make money from it. And they think money is security. And so don't do anything that would threaten the source of my money, I choose to make this my God. So that would be kind of a picture for me of reality versus actuality.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking the question, because I was pretty, I felt that that's how, what the difference was. But I, as you know, I work with the Course in Miracles, and it's always talking about perception to reality, that perception will fade away and then we will get to reality. And so for me, it seemed like it was conflicting with what we just said was actuality. So maybe you can help me with that confusion.
Now, I think in that particular case, of course, he's using the word reality differently than I would use it.
Okay.
I would offer that what is actually true is actuality. My mind constructs a reality. My perception, the output of my mind, is my reality. Your mind looks at the same situation, constructs a different reality. Jeannie's mind looks at the same situation, constructs a different reality. Dr. Tim has a different reality. So that would be the way I would use the word reality versus actuality.
Okay, so I can look, when I'm reading it in the Course in Miracles, understand that it's actually speaking about or making a picture of actuality rather
right,
than the
right.
Reality.
Perception
okay.
is reality.
Right. Okay.
And when we collapse, when we forgive and collapse the perception based on the 5,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, you know, the 5,000 pieces that humanity's put together, then we become available for the actuality to teach us.
Okay.
And as it teaches us, and we listen and follow its guidance, as Salk was saying, I wake up in the morning and my intuition, I'm so excited about what my intuition is going to show me today. What's it going to feed me? What's it going to teach me? Where is it going to take me? When we are sons and daughters of that, then we are the offspring of the Creator, functioning as the offspring of the Creator. And there is no reality that can ever match being alive in the present moment. You know, oftentimes people will, you know, they had this pleasant experience, this wonderful experience that happened to them 20 years ago. And they're still trying to get back to that wonderful experience again. It's like, well, if you could get your mind to produce that wonderful experience again, it would be wonderful, but it would just be dead. It would not be this moment, this instant, this actuality, which is here to enliven and lift us and teach us today as we're designed to be, an alive, fresh, present moment experience. The mind that lives and feeds on the reality that passes, well, I had a nice one here, I had a good one there, I had a really good one there, so there, that's what I want to get. It's like, thank you. You know, I've had some awesome experiences in my life, and thank you, I'll pass. I don't need them again. What I would much rather have is this instant, and this instant, and this instant, and this instant, feeding me, teaching me, uplifting me, bringing me into a fresh, true experience of what the Creator's mind has in store for me right now. I make my mind available for the Creator right on it. Hey, what do you got to show me today? As opposed to, well, I'm going to argue for this. Is, you know, this is how I want it to be. It better be this way. And it's like, no. Am I available? Am I available at this moment for what the gift is today? And, of course, they call that gift the present. There's a reason, because whenever we're there, there is a present. There is a gift available.
Okay, so there is my understanding of what you're saying is that there is one actuality and multiple realities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And then in the Course, when it talks about, because it says you move from perception into reality, it's differentiating between perception and reality, where as we're talking about it today, perception and reality are the same thing.
Perception and reality would be the same thing. So, again, in that particular case, the Course is using the word reality differently. Would use it?
Okay.
And I would say we move from perception or reality into actuality.
Right. Okay. That makes a, that clarify, that kind of clears that up for me. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Ryan, awesome. Well, we've got about 4 minutes left, so certainly you must have another question or thought for us.
She just hung up, so I guess she doesn't.
And or perhaps Dr. Tim has got a thought for you.
Michael, can you not hear me?
Go ahead. I can.
Oh, okay. She's already hung up, so
okay.
We're down to 4 minutes.
Okay. Cool. Tim, do you have any thoughts on what Brenda's question was just now?
Well, no, I think you answered it beautifully, and it's the kind of thing we were talking about earlier where I'm still building more and more brain cells for understanding it and sharing it with others. And part of the thing that was resonating for me as you were talking is how much the conditioning of my family and my culture shades my perception, and how powerfully I have been led to experiences through the worksheet process where it dismantles a false reality. And right in front of my eyes, my perception of the very same events is transformed. And there have been times when that's happened as the result of dismantling a false reality through the worksheet process, that twinkling of an eye, I'm left just breathless at how I'm looking at the same events in my memory and seeing them completely differently. So that'd be the only thing I offer, is that it's my reality, my perception is so heavily influenced by the conditioning of my culture and my family and my past experiences, and that's where the power of the worksheet process comes into play for me, to dismantle that and then allow me a very, very different perception.
Powerful. Right, yeah, I'd be in full agreement and right on track with that. There's an interesting line in the lesson, "What is the world?" And in that lesson, in the Course, what it says is, perception was a skill made up by you to take the place of what God gave you in creation. The 5,000-piece story that we've made up as humanity, as our culture, as you're talking about, as cultural and family programming, is a story that most people are filling their minds with so they don't have to be available to change, so they don't have to be available for the Creator to tell them directly today, alive, what this present moment is about. And it's an awesome place to live, to choose to move to that different place. And that's what we're here to support. And we're down to just the last minute or so. So we'll just say that we're delighted that you're with us today. We invite you to bring a string to the show tomorrow. If you are in the Wilmington, North Carolina area, next Sunday, we'll be starting with a Sunday service at Unity of Wilmington. And then we'll be doing a full week of free work. Actually, Monday night we're not, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday afternoon, we'll be doing a series of free workshops. Saturday, we'll be doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, one workshop where we do have a fee involved. And then Sunday, we'll be speaking at the same Unity of Wilmington once again. So we'll look forward to seeing you there. We appreciate you being with us. Bring the strength to the show tomorrow and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. AGAIN.com.
Evolving continuously.